Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, it's always wonderful to be here with you. Of course, many are in tonight because of the storm that is kind of already amongst us, and certainly from what we are being told, it's going to be even some more things happening with the weather. I personally am very thankful to see it. I kind of enjoy seeing Mother Nature at her best, or for some in a way that really kind of makes you want to think a little bit. So we're very glad to see that, you know, things are moving right along in the universe. But at any rate, before we move forward for tonight's program, we want to give thanks and praises to our Creator, as we do every week, as we are always thankful for the blessings that we are able to obtain, and certainly for the ability to have some kind of insight into what is going on, what has gone on, and certainly what is necessary for us to now do as we fight for true justice, true freedom, true liberation. And of course, we are always very, very cognitive and very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. You are in tune to New Day Resurrection and Liberation. And this is one of the official broadcasts, of course, for the Million Woman March and its movement that we've now began to launch. We have been working very, very hard for the past few years in making certain that we've been able to bring forward the true vision of the Million Woman March. And even though there has been much opposition over the last year, certainly we have been able to rise above it all. And, of course, we've been able to really make some serious headway. We're going to start telling you more about that. Starting tonight, actually, we also want to, of course, pay tribute to those who have celebrated or observed or done something as it pertains to Black August. We are still in the month of August, and for some of us, it does represent more than just a tribute to Augustus. For some of us, we know that there are many important events or important occurrences that have happened in the month of August, and so in view of that, we've taken the time to take note of some of those things. And, you know, it was a wonderful thing that, you know, those who felt the need to bring forward the idea of Black August, we're very thankful that they did and were able to pass it on to the next generation, if we may. I know for myself, I was not familiar with Black August when it initially started. I was really not old enough, I guess you could say, but certainly, again, we are very thankful that it has been a tradition that has been continued and seems to be continuously growing as well. So, again, we give thanks for those who are still upholding and really focusing on the issue of political prisoners. Of course, Black August is definitely about making certain that the plight and the mission to free our political prisoners is, of course, something that is a priority. And while we know that for some they are caught up in much of the day-to-day things that we are often confronted with, just, you know, trying to survive in America, some of us realize that, you know, even though that too has to be dealt with, we would be remiss, to put it mildly, if in fact we did not make certain that we were able to continue to strive and keep our voices, or the voices of those who have taken the position to resist the madness of this country, of this government. Many of them are still locked down. Of course, Mumia Abu-Jamal. Hopefully we'll get a chance to play one of Mumia's recent commentaries a little later on. But at any rate, of course, as we said, Mumia Abu-Jamal is just one of the many political prisoners that are still incarcerated. And certainly Sundiata Okoli, Dr. Matur Shakur, Herman Bell, Russell Schultz. I mean, there are so many. And needless to say, something definitely needs to be done. Well, I can tell you that for the Men and Women Movement, for the Black Women's Defense League, and for several other components of NOW, what we have to bring forward to begin to really take a righteous and a much needed position in the struggle for liberation. What is happening is we are preparing now to really address some very key issues in a very progressive and a very productive kind of way. And as a matter of fact, this coming week here in Philadelphia, one of our first sessions, we're going to tell you more about that very shortly as well. But for right now, we want to remind you again, going back to Black August, that August, of course, is a time to, in fact, remember those who were strong enough, warrior enough to make certain that they did not dismiss, or shall we say, they did not punk out when it came time to go up against this system. And as a result, some of them, of course, did in fact ended up being incarcerated. Well, we know that we have got to continue to make certain that we work towards freeing them. And so very soon, we're going to talk more about some of the things that we now can begin to do a bit more aggressively, a bit more assertively as it pertains to bringing our political prisoners home, having them freed, having them released. Certainly in the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, what we now know is that the last court decision was, still sort of hanging in that it said to keep the previous ruling that was given, if you may, if we want to call it that. But the bottom line is it indicated that Mumia was to remain in prison for life without parole. That is absolutely non-acceptable. And so we have to keep asking ourselves, what is it that we must do? What is it that we are going to do to assure that that ruling doesn't stand, and that also those, again, who are still incarcerated, some for 30 years and more, what is it that we can now really do? Of course, the work that brothers and sisters have been doing over the years to free those political prisoners has been just incredible, to say the least. They have been very, very adamant fighting over these years for these various brothers and sisters, and also for those who were able to fortunately escape this place. But the fact and the question still remains, what is it that now can be done, that must be done? So we're going to start talking more about that too as we proceed, because it's so very, very, very necessary. And certainly the Men and Women Movement now has a few ideas that we want to present. Now, with that said, this coming week, starting August the 31st, there is going to be the first of several sessions here in Philadelphia that will begin to address the issue of the Black community in the 21st century. We want to begin to look at what some may call Black leadership. What we've seen in Philadelphia and, of course, in other cities as well, is the decline in real Black leadership, and the decline in real representation, the decline of real activism. For some reason, it has seemed to become a corporate thing all across the board, that people can or don't want to do things unless there's some corporation or some party or some other nonsense connected to it. Well, we think it's time to challenge that. We think it's time that we begin to really do something about it. I mean, meetings are really wonderful, but certainly action is better. And so on August the 31st, we're going to begin to have some other kinds of sessions here in Philadelphia that begins to map out some real strategies as to how we can really begin to establish greater self-determination in our communities.
also greater representation in our communities, and along with that, accountability. So we're going to tell you a little more about that very shortly. And also, before we get ready to go to our live line, we have a very special announcement that we just got a little while ago. Brother Alton Maddox, we're going to be doing a special broadcast tomorrow at 7 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, tune in to a special segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. And joining us live is going to be Brother Alton Maddox. All right. We've been trying to get him on for a while, and we finally were able to coordinate our schedules, and we spoke with him just a little while ago, and he has agreed to come on tomorrow night. Now, of course, we're going to be talking about this case that recently has been dismissed, the rape case of Sister Diallo. Now, of course, Brother Alton was very involved in some of the latter portions of that case, and, of course, now has some updates and also some follow-ups and some other kind of actions that's going to take place in regards to the situation with the rape of the sister. We're going to talk about the kind of manipulation of the so-called media, as they often do. I mean, it certainly is not a surprise whatsoever. But we're going to really examine that further and point out how very easy it is to get sidetracked, and how many did as soon as the press was able to manipulate some things that they were able to put together and then come up with a whole other kind of visual idea that they were able to place in folks' heads. Bottom line, we're going to talk about that tomorrow. Again, 7 o'clock, tune in tomorrow. Let folks know we're going to be live for at least an hour and a half talking with Brother Alton Maddox. Okay, we're going to open the chat room in about maybe 5 minutes, so those who are waiting to get into the chat room, please bear with us. We will be going into the chat room very shortly. And let's see, we are going to be talking very soon with a representative from the Freedmen's Group, known also as the Black Indians. Now, I'm sure that many of you have heard about the situation that recently occurred with the decision, and I believe that decision came down from the Supreme Court, that did, in fact, uphold the decision that the descendants of the freemen, of the five civilized tribes, well, they're no longer citizens of the Cherokee Nation. Oh, yeah, that's right. And this is a perfect situation, brothers and sisters, because for those who, for whatever reason, believe that because the United States declared that black folks, African people, were then, of course, citizens based on, you know, them making some amendment or whatever, well, guess what? This is a perfect example of showing that if you are given citizenship, it can also be taken away. Well, tonight we're going to talk directly with not only a representative of the five civilized nations, the descendants of the freemen, but we're going to talk with President Marilyn Vann, who has been fighting a very, very diligent fight to obtain, or shall I say, to secure the rights of Africans who were, in fact, involved in what one may call the Trail of Tears, shall we say, but also in the development of this nation. Now, brothers, this, again, is a classic example as to why it is so important that we not only continue to fight in representation of our ancestors, but why it's so important that we never, ever give up as well. Now, with that said, because I see that Sister Marilyn is waiting and we're going to patch her in a few moments, but before we do, here's something that I wanted to share. There is a poem, a very brief poem But I think it's a very appropriate poem to open us up with for tonight. It's a poem by none other than Claude McKay. And before we bring Sister Marilyn on, I'm going to read that poem to you. And that, I think, will set the tone and will speak to how I think we need to focus a little bit of our thinking as we proceed. And it's this: if we must die, let it not be like hogs, hunted and penned in an inglorious spot, while around us bark the mad and hungry dogs, making their mock at our accursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain, then even the monsters we defy shall be constrained to honor us through the dead. O kingsmen, we must meet the common foe, though for outnumbered let us show us brave, and for their thousand blows deal one death blow. What though before us lies the open grave? Like men we'll face the murderous cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying, but fighting back. Claude McKay. And if you're not familiar with them, you need to be. At any rate, we're going to get ready to go to our live line. And in a few minutes, we're going to open the chat room. But joining us now is, again, the president of the Freeman Ancestral Group. And joining us, hold on one moment. Oh, by the way, family, before we begin, I need to point this out to you as well. We may be having some technical difficulties tonight due to the rain and the storm that's going on. So if for whatever reason we get disconnected, usually we're able to get back on within a few moments. So things seem to be running pretty smoothly, but we just want to remind you that if for some reason we do get cut off, please just dial back in or go back online, whichever way you're listening, and usually, again, within a few moments, we're usually able to reconnect. So we just wanted to put that out there to you, just in case, because sometimes it's the weather and sometimes it's something else. So in the event it should happen, again, we remind you, just dial back in or go back online, and you should be able to get back on. Okay, what we're going to do now is go to our live line, and hopefully joining us is going to be Sister Marilyn Van. Let me see if we have her on this line. Sister Marilyn, are you on this line?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Oh, great. Yes, very good, very good. Well, welcome to New Day Resurrection and Liberation.
I'm very glad, happy to be on tonight. This is wonderful.
Well, I can tell you, when we let people know that you were coming on, they were like, oh, yeah, we're tuning in tonight. So we have a lot of people listening in, and they just can't wait to hear, as I cannot wait to hear from directly from you, because, you know, a lot of the reports that we get via through the mass media is oftentimes distorted or just plain old, you know, not true, period. So what we want to do, and this is what we strive to do here at New Day Resurrection and Liberation, and that is to bring it with the source, bring it directly from whence it comes. So we thank you for, you know, taking the time to join us tonight. And again, we welcome you.
Well, the story of the Freedmen is very important. Because you have many people who think that racism and apartheid have just went away almost by magic, but they have not. It's alive and well in this country, and, you know, things are happening every day, you know, regarding the, people of African descent, such as, you know, including the Freedmen people of the five tribes, including the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, Sister Marilyn, tell us a little bit about how Africans became members of the Cherokee Nation.
Okay. After persons of African descent came to this country, the Cherokee Nation, people of African descent began to come into the Cherokee Nation. The majority of the people as slaves. Not every person was a slave. There were people who were, especially in those early days, that were adopted into the tribe on the same basis as other people. But by the time of the Civil War, they had an entrenched, a slave-based society with plantations. A lot of the Cherokees by that time had intermarried with white people. So the tribal constitution, the tribal codes, the tribal laws were very similar to the Deep South regarding forbidding black people from marrying other people, making it unlawful to learn to read and write, all of the horrible things, you know, the punishments much heavier if you committed a crime. The tribe even went to war with the United States, joining the Confederacy, and largely in order to protect the slave-based society that they had. At the end of the Civil War, the Treaty of 1866 was signed between the tribe and the U.S. government. And the thing is, a lot of people think of, quote-unquote, Indians as a race. Well, from a federal government viewpoint, an Indian tribe is a political body where the government has, the U.S. government has a government-to-government relationship with, not the same kinds of things, not the same kind of relationship as, say, 200 years ago, but one where the tribe has some rights and the U.S. government has some legal obligations, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things that was agreed on between the tribal leadership and the U.S. government was that the people of African descent, those that were not already citizens, would have citizenship in the tribe. And this only makes sense because those persons who had been abused through slavery or second-class citizenship or whatever in the Deep South prior to the Civil War, they received U.S. citizenship. You know, the same thing with any other country that had enslaved or colonialized people has always incorporated such people into this society. So this is how the freedmen people obtained their citizenship. After the Civil War, the blacks in the tribe really, thrived quite well for a while. You had, blacks who were tribal leaders, well-to-do businessmen. Things, began to go downhill when the U.S. government, because so many white people were coming in from Europe, demanding free or cheap land, and the U.S. government began to pressure the tribe to allot the lands, and divide the tribes and the lands, so much land for each tribal member, in order to make it easier to steal the land of the people of African descent. The U.S. government said, "Well, we'll list. We're making a census of everyone in the tribe who's going to receive an allotment, but the people of African descent, we're going to." Register them as freedmen. It's like making a census of all the citizens in a state, but on page one, you say, here are the Jewish people. Page two, here are the Puerto Ricans. Page three, this and that and the other. And, the society at that time was completely absorbed with, racist ideas. Well, what's happened in modern times is that you have the tribal leadership. They control casinos. There's a lot of wealth coming in. And so just as in the days of Strom Thurmond and folks like that, it's easy to demonize the blacks in the tribe. So anyway, this is kind of a short history of the freedmen of the tribe and some of the things that have happened in the past.
Well, sister, you can take your time. I mean, we have at least an hour, so... You don't have to rush through anything unless your time doesn't permit it. But, you know, the people that are listening are very interested in hearing whatever information you have, because for some, you know, this is new information. And for those who are students or you know, enthusiasts of African history, this information is very vital. It's very important for us because we need to know what has happened here in this country to in every way possible. So, again, thank you for sharing that, because, you know, it wasn't, I'll be very honest, it wasn't until very recently that I really had a better understanding of the fact that there were so-called Indian nations that had slaves, that had our people as slaves. I mean, it took a while for that to kind of sink in.
Well, I think that's true because, for one thing, the history of the people of African descent in this country, a lot of it has been hidden. I mean, you know, okay, black people were slaves. It's like that's
that is
it's like in the textbooks and the classes, except maybe in a black history class or something like this. You don't hear a whole lot more. But you don't hear that black people have been chiefs or tribal leaders or important businessmen or tribal attorneys and things like that associated, you know, with the five tribes. And part of that is because, as I said, you don't have a lot of people that have a legal treaty right to tribal membership based on the fact that they were that such folks are descendants from slaves. And then number two, the tribal leadership in these former slave holding tribes, they don't want a lot of focus on this issue. Why? Because they have been successful in going into Washington D.C., meeting with politicians, certainly for passing the money around, because we have a casino wealth now. And and being able to get some actions, some benefits passed, I believe, principally on white guilt. 99% of the politicians in this country have heard of the Trail of Tears. They've heard of the suffering Cherokees who froze, who died. But you know what? When you see these movies and these documentaries, you never see the pictures of the black people who carried the baggage, and they didn't have any blankets. Because there wasn't enough blankets for everybody else. And so when there was little food or a few blankets or whatever, the blacks, you know, got the least. And, you know, the other folks that did, that, you know, the blacks that carried the baggage at the end of the day, other people sat out. The blacks had to go and cut wood and make fire, cook food, you know. So what I'm trying to say is if, all of this became known to those members of Congress, those committee chairs who determined what are the tribal services, how much it's going to go to the tribes, including the five tribes. You know, it's kind of like, well, wait a minute here. At least the U.S. government is making some effort to be sure that our former slaves, our former colonialized peoples can vote, you know, that, you know, they are getting – you know, that they can't be paid half as much, you know, for the same job and that sort of, the sort of things that were going on 60 or 80 years ago based on the state law or the county law or whatever. The U.S. government has gone a long ways to cleaning up a lot of those things. But it's kind of, but I think the idea is, you know, if it was well, it was known that the tribal governments are not living up to the agreements to the people that were enslaved and abused under tribal law, it's kind of like, well, you know, why should we give more? Why should we feel sorry for them? They're not sorry for the people that they've abused. You know, they're not trying to, you know, do, you know, what was agreed on. So why should we white people up here in Washington, D.C., so why should we do more? I think that, so it's to the benefit to keep this hush-hush, to try to rewrite history, to try to completely wipe the history of the blacks and their contributions to the five tribes out of the history books, you know, into the ash can of history.
Wow. Well, for those of us who are familiar with how this country operates, certainly how it has treated people of African descent, you know, this, of course, is not anything that is new to us nor surprising. You know, it just, again, demonstrates clearly that in the 21st century, though things may be subtle in some areas where there may be a darker looking face in the so-called White House, nevertheless, there are still some very devious and very heinous types of things that are happening when it comes to social justice and other related matters. Sister Marilyn, tell us about how this particular thing that we want to address and have our listening family to become more acquainted with. 2007, tell us a little bit about what happened.
Okay, in 2007, let me backtrack a little bit.
Sure.
For many years, between the time of the allotments and in the early 1970s, there was very little operations by the tribal government because the U.S. government had basically shut down the governments of most of the tribes. You know, there were an appointed chiefs who were doing some things, you know, operating directly with the U.S. government. And there were some programs that were being administered by the Bureau of Indian Affairs or different federal agency, but very little activity by tribal governments or tribal leaders. This changed when the U.S. Congress passed some laws, the Principal Chiefs Act, the Indian Self-Determination Laws, which made it easier for tribal governments to begin to reorganize. So, you know, the blacks, the freedmen of the tribes, of course, began to participate also. But what began to happen was that the blacks in the tribes began to challenge some of the chiefs, you know, not necessarily going along with this chief or that chief, and so they began to try to sweep the blacks out. So the blacks began to file lawsuits in the courts. Well, finally, and as I said, you know, things were very difficult. You know, the black tribal members would go and they would say, well, you know, under order of Chief Landkiller, you know, you can't go to the clinic anymore. Those kinds of things were happening. So finally, in 2006, there was a, you know, in one of the cases that was in the tribal court, they said, well, the chief or the tribal council couldn't just block people from voting or services and put and just put people out of the tribe. Well, this didn't go over with the sitting chief at that time, Mr. Smith, who began a big campaign saying, well, we have the right to change the tribe's constitution. And again, you know, we still have ongoing federal lawsuits, too. So at any rate, so finally in 2007, after the tribal leadership had a lot of secret meetings, spent up tribal funds, let me explain one thing. There's very few people in the Cherokee Nation who know that much about the tribe's history, including the freedmen. The majority of the people in the Cherokee Nation, I would say 90% of them, 95%, are people who are completely Caucasian-looking in appearance. They know almost nothing about the tribe's history. They are not traditional or cultural people. Even their grandparents couldn't speak Cherokee. I'm not saying I have any problem with the people's appearance or whether they can speak or this, that, and the other, because the folks have a legal right to tribal membership. But, you know, what I'm saying is that 90%, 95% of these people have completely lived lives of white privilege. They have never been discriminated against because they have a very small amount of Indian ancestry. And this also goes back into the history of Oklahoma and these five tribes. As I mentioned earlier, you had a lot of white people who were coming into these tribes and intermarrying. And one of the reasons why is, unlike some of your tribes and other parts of the country, you know, you could, if a white person, say if a white man married an Indian lady who was a citizen, he would gain citizenship in the tribe, and so he could gain property rights. And so some whites, you know, business people became very wealthy and very prominent where they couldn't have done so, you know, just staying in quote-unquote white society. And so so when Oklahoma became a state, and Oklahoma was becoming settled, what's now Oklahoma was being settled about 1900, a lot of white people from the Deep South were pouring in illegally into what's now Oklahoma, what was Indian Territory. And they did, and those although some of those individuals wanted every person of color to fall under the Jim Crow law, there were enough prominent white men who had Indian wives. And again, most of these women had very little Indian ancestry by that time, but they didn't want their children to have to go to the back of the bus or the Jim Crow law or those kinds of things like this. So the laws were written. Senate Bill number 1, the first law that was passed when Oklahoma became a state in 1907, said that, you know, defined a Negro as a person with one drop of African blood. And under Senate Bill number 1, only Negroes were subject to these Jim Crow laws. So you went from a tribal society in where the blacks and the other people in the tribe had began kind of working together, living together in pretty well harmony, and moving together as a united tribe. All of a sudden, the people with African descent, you know, were just shoved over here, and so nobody wanted to have Negro relatives anymore. Those folks that had a black grandmother, but you couldn't necessarily kill it, people went to great lengths to hide that. And, you know, and people did that for their own survival. So, you know, as I said, you know, so you have people, whereas you had lynchings of, you know, quite a few lynchings in the early days of Oklahoma, 1910, 1920, you really didn't have any lynchings of people of Indian descent, very few, especially people who were completely Caucasian-looking Indians. So what I'm saying is, you know, that's a big part of it, and unfortunately in this country, there's a lot of stereotypes about people of African blood, you know, regarding, you know, a lot of people. It may not be polite to say in society, there's a lot of people that when they think of black people, they think of welfare mothers. They think of criminals, lawbreakers, you know, a host of stereotypes. And a lot of these people and the tribes do so too. So they may say this is on account of sovereignty, but number one, this is about who's going to control the hundreds of millions of dollars pouring into the tribe of the gaming money and the federal grants, and then number two, not wanting to associate with their Negro relatives.
Wow.
So that's the true thing, and so you had the majority of the people who voted, and which was not that many people, but they did vote the blacks out. And so because of the federal litigation that we've had going on, the tribe had to pull back from that. They said, well, we'll look at these issues back in the tribal court again. But now, so what's happened here a week ago is that we're once again in the midst of a tribal election. It's very close between two principal chief candidates. And so all of a sudden, the blacks not being able to vote in this ongoing election, which is going to happen in less than 30 days, you know, this changes the dynamics of this election.
Wow. Now, the election that comes up in 30 days is specifically to do what? To elect what?
It is to decide who is going to be the principal chief of the Cherokee Nation. A couple of months ago, at the end of June, there was an election for principal chief, And that the election was very close. One person, you know, they did two or three recounts, and the current chief, he was, I think the last count they said that he was winning by four votes or something. Because the challenger is a well-to-do man who had a lot of legal support. There was a lot of publicity about this. There were a lot of attorneys involved. And the tribal court, this tribal Supreme Court, whose judges are appointed by the chief, they decided to back off the election and just said, well, we'll have the people vote again on September the 24th. And so this is what's happening. Just before the absentee ballots were going to be sent out, just before the people were going to vote, all of a sudden, the blacks are being pulled out of the race, out of voting. And I mean, and again, the voting. Sometimes when I speak, I hold up a voting card, one for the tribal and one for the non-tribal, like for their, presidential, congressional, whatever. And I say this is a dangerous weapon, for this weapon, this voting card. That was the reason that blacks in the South were beaten and had dogs sicked on them, because when people vote, that's power. Certainly money creates power, but folks that are united in voting, for certain purposes, certain candidates, that's a power base too.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, it is said that the truth will set you free, and I dare say, I think some folks are being set free tonight. So now with this happening in 2007, something recently happened this past week. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's when this tribal court ruling said that said that they did not have the authority to, I think they said that they did not have the authority to toss out this amendment to the tribal constitution that was voted on 2007. And then they said that if it is a matter of interpretation of the treaty, they said that should be left to the federal courts. Well, it seems to me the appropriate thing would have simply deferred this issue to the federal court and said, we'll just withdraw and allow the federal courts to proceed. There was the only reason for removing the freedmen from the tribal voting rolls is purely for political purposes. Because they could have simply said, we'll defer this to the federal court. It's not a tribal court issue. Which actually it is not.
So the decision that came last week, which court did that come from?
That became from the tribal court of the Cherokee Nation. It was not a federal court decision at all. The tribe has spent tens of millions of dollars trying to get the freedmen, run the freedmen out of the federal courts, and the strategy of this is the same as some of the big corporations out there. A lot of times, the guy that ultimately wins the case is not the one who really had the law on their side. A lot of times the guy who wins is the guy that, has very deep pockets and it can continuously file motions to dismiss a lawsuit, can continue to file the same ones unless the judge just says, I've had enough, I'm going to hold for the other guy if you come back and with the same thing again. With the idea that other people who don't own casinos or whatever, that they cannot, continue on litigation, for year after year after year. And that is the tribal strategy. you know, they cannot win based on the law. The things that they have said, that the treaty was abolished in 1906 by the U.S. government. Of course, that's not correct, because the tribe has used the Treaty of 1866 in order to go into court regarding dealings with other tribes and the tribal boundaries and the Arkansas riverbed, and they have won, you know, signing the Treaty of 1866. Things that they said about the freedmen being forced on the tribe, the federal courts have looked at that sort of thing before. When the tribal leadership has tried to block payments from going to the freedmen tribal members on the same basis as other people. That is their only strategy. We can outweigh them. We can outlast them.
Sure.
And win by default. And so it has not happened to the freedmen, but there are other folks who are in other cases that sort of thing has happened to. And there's been cases that, you know, people lost in a lower court, and maybe they didn't have money to take them to an appellate court. Maybe they could have won. But as I said, that is their sole strategy.
Unbelievable. But then on the other hand, it's very much what they do all the time. So now, what exactly is the response of the freemen to this last ruling?
Well, the freedmen people are very disappointed that this happened. I think the freedmen people had hoped that, the freedmen people, those that are more politically astute, know that the principal chief, you know, has the right to hire the judges or appoint the judges to the court. There's been other things that have happened in the tribal courts where the judges, based on following the law, the law really wasn't followed. For instance, you heard me mention about this petition where signatures were taken up to put the freedmen people citizenship on a ballot that people voted on. The Cherokee Nation has a tribal code that strictly details, you know, what's required for a signature to be counted. If there's any kind of initiative petition or a referendum petition, and a lot of the laws kind of mirror the laws in the state of Oklahoma, but they allowed a lot of signatures to be counted that were not legal signatures based on the tribal code. Signatures that were the petition carriers did not notarize that they witnessed those signatures. Some of the people, signed their name. They didn't sign their address and a tribal card number, but those signatures still got counted. And so they just barely had enough to meet the law of what the count was. So that tells you in itself that the judges, were not fair, were not right. We had some people who had been willing to come into the court and testify about fraud, how they had been tricked into signing the petition. But the judges said that they wouldn't hear any of this testimony about fraud or why or how people's signatures got on there. And so, as I said, the whole thing was rigged in the first place. That's correct. That's exactly correct. And so, as I said, you think about the secret meetings that the White Citizens Council, were having in the 1950s and 60s. The only difference is, of course, these chiefs, they cannot stick dogs on people. They can't come and burn down the homes of all the freedmen and the freedmen communities. Those kinds of things the Justice Department just wouldn't allow, not in 2011. But you can have a lot of corruption. You can have a lot of law breaking when you control money, when you control contracts, when you can make a decision of who's going to get that multimillion-dollar contract. Is an Indian corporation, who's going to be able to, who's going to get that $300,000 job as an administrator, you know, controlling hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, gives you quite a bit of power. It gives you power in Washington, D.C., because you can go and you can, you know, donate a lot of money to people to give them a check, and you can tell them something. Only 1% of it is true. Maybe none of it is true. Because they're holding a check in their hand, they don't want to ask you any questions. They don't want to investigate. And then if some other person that comes up there or a group of people who cannot give you a big fat check, you don't even want your junior staffer to talk to them. That's the reality of Washington politics. Pay for play. And I'm not just talking about Republicans or Democrats. I'm talking about people on both sides of the aisle. And I'm not talking about only the ones who are Caucasian people either. There's a lot of people who are of African descent who are more interested in a big check than they are in civil rights. Now, that's the truth.
Yes, no doubt. We see them every day, believe me. If you're living in Philly and New York, all over the country, we see them every day. And the sad part of it is, we sit back and watch them do this, knowing that they do this, and do nothing. No, it's extremely, extremely, not only disappointing and frustrating, but at some point it becomes an injustice, you know, in itself. So now, with what has happened, let me ask this question, because I'm glad you clarified a couple of things, because, again, this is why it's so important to get the information directly from the source, because the report that I got indicated or said that the matter had went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court upheld the ruling of the council. So with that said, is there a thought, or is there something that is going to be now put into another court?
Yes. As I said, we have two federal lawsuits that have been ongoing for quite some time that are looking at some of the same issues the tribal courts looked at, but not dealing at all with what the tribal constitution says, only with what the federal law says. We have attorneys, and I've been authorized to give out the information that our attorneys are working on a request for a preliminary injunction to block this upcoming election if the Freedmen people are not going to be able to participate in it.
Okay.
So it has not been filed yet, but it is set to be filed this coming week.
So, Sister Merrill, let me also ask, because this was a question that someone had brought to my attention, and what we're going to do very shortly, we're going to go to our lines, because we know we have quite a few callers on, and callers, if you haven't pressed the button as indicated, please do so that I know that you want to ask a question. I do see a couple, but I know there are other people who wanted to ask some questions. So we're going to do that very shortly. But Sister Marilyn, let me ask, now, with presently the way that this decision has gone down, this, of course, will affect the health care of the Freedmen's Peoples, and also, I guess, the education. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. If the people are not recognized as tribal members, they will, people cannot access these services. And those people who have jobs strictly based on Indian preference, as a member of a federally recognized tribe, those jobs or contracts, will be terminated. Maybe not necessarily immediately, but, you know, the jobs would not be renewed, or the person might be replaced by a person who is a member of the tribe. So my understanding is that the injunction is to cover that, too, is to be sure that the people are, that this ruling is overturned, And again, I have not actually seen this injunction request because it's being written right now. But yes, that is correct. We're asking the federal judge for complete relief.
Okay.
Immediately.
Now, one of the other questions is, how will this affect the land? Those freedmen peoples that have land, will this new ruling have an effect on their rights to the land?
Okay, the Cherokee Nation, no, it doesn't. The Cherokee Nation is not a reservation tribe. At one time,
okay,
there was a reservation, say about 110, 120 years ago, when all the land was owned in common by the tribal government, and each citizen used as much of the land as they needed. Now, then when the lands were divided, and each citizen received like 110 acres of land as their share of the tribal lands, then the tribal government owned very little land. The tribe has bought some of the land base back, but the majority of the lands that the tribe formerly owned are in the hands of Caucasian people. And so, if you have a freedman person who, say, inherited their father or their grandfather's share of land that they received in 1906, 1908, right after the lands were allotted, that land is not being taken from them because they own that land is in fee. And now people have to pay taxes on it. It was only untaxable to the original allottee, that person that was listed on the Dawes roll. But nobody's land is being taken away based on this. No, not at all.
Okay. I have a few more questions. What we're going to do is go to our line and let's see, caller, the last digit of your number is 9595. Do you have a question for Sister Marilyn Van? Give us a moment. We're patching you in now, having a little bit of difficulty, but you should be coming in a moment, we hope. Oh, goodness. Okay, we're having a little bit of problem here with the board, so we're going to try another one. Okay, there you are. Caller at 9595, your last digit numbers. You have a question or comment?
Yes, Empress, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Brother Evan?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, greetings, brother. How are you tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you feeling?
The struggle continues.
Well,
do you have a
question? A lot of this information is just so groundbreaking, and what I wanted to find out is if there's any, physical documentation or books out there, is there any way possible to sort of preserve this history for the future generations? Like even this conversation that's going on right now, is there a way to record this, or just so that the individuals that are here aren't the only ones that are privy to this knowledge?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me first respond to that, and then Sister Marilyn, you can respond. Any show that we have here at New Day is available once we do the live broadcast. All you do is go to our website and go to On Demand and go to the date of the broadcast, and you can access it at any time. Once it's originally aired, it's available at any time. Just go to On Demand.
Okay.
Did you get that, Brother Evan?
Yeah, I'm typing it down now. Got you.
Okay. All right. Do you have any suggestions for books
or other
research materials?
Yes, there are different. There are books that have been written about the Cherokee freedmen, their history. One person who's written a book called The Cherokee Freedmen by Dr. Daniel Littlefield. This book was written in the 1970s, and so the most recent history is not there. But there's a lot of history up until just after Dawes Rolls. Dawes Rolls were made up through about 1906, 1907. Dr. Sershi Sturm, S-T-U-R-M, has written a book called Blood Politics, and it's not a book strictly on the Freedmen, but there's a couple of chapters that talk about the Freedmen, you know, during the 20th century. That's a very good book. Dr. Celia Naylor from Dartmouth, who is a lady of African descent, a professor. She has written a book about Cherokee Freedmen, you know, that's been published in the last year or two. You know, and I would recommend looking at that book. And now a book that's going to be coming out that I have done some proofreading on is one that's going attorney Hannibal Johnson, a graduate of Harvard Law School who lives in Oklahoma. He has a book that's supposed to be coming out at the end of, I believe, this year. I don't know the name of it, but if he has a website, attorney Hannibal Johnson. So if you can kind of check there, I'm sure that he'll be announcing his book. So there are different books that are out there. Also, if you go on the internet, there are like my organization. You know, we have a website, www.freedmen5tribes.com. You know, there are links to different articles, some of the legal briefs are there, and they refer, you know, back to Cherokee history, some of the Cherokee law, and, you know, you can, you know, get quite a bit of education. There's also been different law professors and the like who have written different books. I'm trying to think of this one lady. She graduated from Howard Law School. Let me see here. Her name is just went from me. But anyway, she has written she's written an article or two about the Cherokee Freedmen. We were on a panel out in about 3 years ago. Also, there is and this lady, she is a descendant of Choctaw Freedmen, Carla Pratt. She was a professor. She may not be at Penn State anymore, but she was a law professor there. Dr. Pratt, I know she's written one or two good articles. They're out there on the internet. They're very good. Also, there is a professor, Kevin Maylard, who is a Seminole citizen. We were on the same panel, myself and him and Dr. Pratt. And he's written an article or two. So, as I said, there's quite a bit of information. It's historical and legal. If you can write down those specific names and see what you can find.
Wonderful. Okay. All right, Brother Evan, does that kind of help you get started?
Oh, yes, very much so.
All right, yes, thanks.
I thank, like I said, both you sisters for coming on with the show tonight and really bringing some of this information, because it really is hitting. I sort of feel like Alice in Wonderland, sort of tumbling down the rabbit hole as the plot thickens.
Wonderful. All right, my brother, thank you. Thank you for tuning in. And again, if you need to, review any of that, or once the show is aired, just go to the on-demand segment of the website and you'll be able to, you know, access it again.
Hello.
All right, good thing.
Okay, we're going to go to caller. You're at 7586. Did you have a comment or a question to Sister Marilyn?
Yes. Hi there. I did have a comment, and I just wanted to comment on the initially you were talking about the resurrection of slavery tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
And I want to comment because this is so real. The new slavery is economic assassinations and financial rapings. They are inducing poverty on people of color at disproportionate rates. And particularly, mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about just a little bit about comment on nationwide the extermination of qualified educators. What they're
mm-hmm.
doing now. Yeah, what they're doing now to qualified educators, particularly those who have a master's degree and experience, is running them out of school districts. And they're doing such via contract violations, contract non-enforcement by the union. I mean, this is systematic. This is across the board. Thereafter, they are criminally running out, the qualified teachers, whether they have exemplary ratings or not, through this phenomenon, contract violation, contract non-enforcement. And when a teacher gets a U rating, it's based on whatever person feels, and the rating is not validated, and thereafter, that termination, whether it's a rating, whether it's just contract violations and the union didn't do anything to enforce the contract, that
mm-hmm.
termination is being used to blacklist exemplary educators for the rest of their lives. Oh, this is modernized slavery.
Wow. Sister, I would want you to do this, if you would please, because I'd like to get you back on so that we can specifically talk about that issue and get others involved. Would you please send me your information so that we can recontact you to schedule you for an upcoming show?
Okay, sure. I'm on Blog Talk Radio, too, now.
Okay, okay. If you would send us an email either through the blog or to nationalmwm@aol.com.
Oh God! I let me try and write that down. Go ahead, say that again.
Okay, but if not, just send it through the blog. You can send it because we get emails through that as well.
No, I don't know. Somebody called me in on this call, so I don't know your blog. I've never, you know, somebody just told me to dial this number.
Okay, gotcha.
Where is your blog? What is your blog? Or give me the email.
New Day Resurrection and Liberation. But if you send it to National M. WM.
Wait a minute. Which one do you want me to do? New Day Resurrection?
No. If you send it to the National MWM, we'll respond to it a little quicker.
National MW. So that's Mary Women.
Million Woman March.
Okay. National.
WM.
Okay.
At AOL.
Will do.
Okay, and then we will call you or contact you and get you scheduled on, and we'll focus specifically on that topic.
Okay,
we definitely need to talk about that.
Well,
right.
That's definitely that modernized slavery.
You got that right. Thank you, sister. Okay, we're going to go to one more call, and then we're going to go back to Sister Marilyn and talk more about the Black Indians, because I do believe there is a rally coming up next week. Is that correct, Sister Marilyn?
That's correct. We're going to have a demonstration outside the Bureau of Indian Affairs building, Muskogee,
Okay. Well, hold
Oklahoma.
That point for one more. We're going to go to one more caller, and then we're going to come back to you, Sister Marilyn. You can tell us about the upcoming rally and also what it is that we may be able to do to help or support in any kind of way. We're going to go to caller. The last digit of your number is 1436. I think that's Brother Muhammad on the line. Do you have a question for Sister Marilyn, Brother Muhammad? Okay. Maybe he's not there. Okay. We're going to try, I think, one more. Let's see. Okay, I think that might be it for the questions for right now. So let me do this. Okay, Sister Marilyn, go ahead and tell us about the upcoming rally.
Okay, we're going to have the Bureau of Indian Affairs has a great deal of power over tribal governments by U.S. law. And so the Secretary of Interior, or the Assistant Secretary, actually can immediately, block enforcement of this tribal court ruling. So we are having a rally, a demonstration, next Friday, 3:30 Eastern Time, 2:30 Central Time, outside the Bureau of Indian Affairs building in Muskogee, Oklahoma. That's the regional office. And we're asking folks to come out of all races, creeds, and colors, tribes, whatever, bring their signs demanding that the BIA enforce the law on behalf of the freedmen so that they will not, so that not even for one day will we lose our voting rights or our rights to services.
Okay. All right. We're going to go back to the line. We have another question here. Caller, let's see. I think you're at 7347. Did you have a question or a comment for us?
Yeah, question, comment. You know how it go. Isn't
you've been around the food.
You know it is. But
okay.
This sister, when you look at the government's behavior, since treaties were invoked, isn't it business, would you say it's business as usual, and that the African here in America continues to get the short end of the stick? Okay, so answer that question, and then if I have time, let me back in.
We're going to keep you on. Okay, because we do have time, and as a matter of fact, so folks will know, we've extended our program for tonight. We will go over a half an hour. So you stay right there, Brother Ramesses. Sister Marilyn, can you respond to the brother's question there?
If I understand right, you're asking, isn't this business as usual because there are treaties involved? Yes, it is. Except that not only is the United States not doing its part to enforce the treaty rights of the freedmen people, largely because of the dollars involved. It's always a matter of the money, the property, but you have the tribal leadership who are not, doing their part to enforce the treaty either. And again, it boils down to who's going to hold those positions to make the decisions, and because of the money. And as I said, this time it's big money. A lot of people are making money off of this issue, and it's and a lot of people. I think most of the people on this program have probably heard of the Tulsa race riot, when the blacks in Oklahoma. In North Tulsa, where the Black Wall Street, where you had all of these black businesses, a lot of people don't realize that the reason that you had that wealth was because of the people's tribal memberships. You didn't have sharecroppers in eastern Oklahoma and southern Oklahoma because the blacks, because they own property, fee property, that had oil and gas, and they got grazing revenues, and they had gotten educations as members of the tribes that they were able to build the Wall Street. And so burning down the city of Tulsa, where all the blacks lived, that was a way to impoverish the people, and depriving the blacks now of our rights, for instance, say to bid on contracts as Indian contractors, members of tribes. This is another way to take away our economic power. So this is just another coordinated effort to keep the black economic power down.
Mm-hmm.
Business as usual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. But, Ramesses, did you have another question?
Well, I don't want to, you know how people say you're controversial, but let's take it from this level. The Africans here in America, on a wide scale basis, have never been afforded the economic stability. You always have money in different pockets. Example, Madam C.J. Walker, right? You mentioned one of those areas where I would talk about, which is Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Black Wall Street. Then you have the people in, say, Rosewood, okay? And then you have the whites who go in and do what they do, which is destroy under any reason, and the government does not protect the people who live there. So do we use the word citizen when we are describing ourselves as Africans here in America?
You were born in this country, correct? Were you born in the United States?
Hey, you'll hear yeses to a lot of questions, but disagreement. So answer the question the way that you you see fit.
Okay. Citizenship
is
a legal right.
Question, rather.
Say again.
The sister asked you a question, and I think that would help for her to respond to your answer a bit more effectively.
I answered that question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. What was the answer to that question?
I asked if you were an American citizen.
And you asked me, was I born in this country?
Okay. Let me backtrack. Are you an American citizen? I won't ask if you were born here or not. I'm sorry. That was too personal.
No, I don't consider myself an American citizen.
Okay. Citizenship is a matter of the law of whatever society or country. The freedmen people, as citizens of the tribe, have had obligations, to the tribe, just as in this country here. Even when black men were barred from going to the polls, black men certainly had to make up their share of men going to the front lines in World War I and World War II and Vietnam.
In
Vietnam, people were voting. But, tyrants, whether or not they are governors like Strom Thurmond or George Wallace, or whether they are tribal chiefs like Chadwick Smith or Ross Swimmer, who was a fellow that was appointed by Reagan to the head of the Bureau of Indian Affairs a few years ago. Tyrants take power. They control power. So, and they will not release it, just because they're doing something wrong. They have to be forced to do the right thing. That's always the way it is. So if you have legal rights, yes. So, I consider myself by law to be a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. And so if I do nothing, or if we the freedmen people, if we do nothing, then we will not, we may have legal rights, but we will not be able to continue to exercise them. So this is no different, than how it's always been. I don't know how long people of African descent are going to have to continue to struggle against those forces who want to gain power by playing the black card, playing the race card, but it's still continuing in the 21st century. I hope I answered the question.
you answered the questions because when you say by law, right?
That's right, federal law, that's correct.
Right, now, when you say by law, right, I'm going to refer to the Civil Court Dred Scott case, which still hasn't been overturned. That case has still not been overturned. All the laws put in place, and you mentioned all the Jim Crow laws that were down south, but the Supreme Court, the federal court, ruled that there is no law made on this land that a white has to respect that of a black. And that decision has still not been overturned. Are you familiar with it?
I'm familiar with the Dred Scott decision, but my understanding, I thought that the 13th, the 14th, and the 15th amendments to the U.S. Constitution effectively overthrew the Dred Scott decision. That was my understanding.
Mm-mm. And
wow.
And then the last piece, the last piece that I'm going to state is all the way direct to the Constitution. Okay, you want to deal with the 14th, 15th Amendment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But none of the language has changed that refers to the African here in America as a human. It refers to them as three-fifths. Are you familiar with that language in the Constitution?
No.
Okay.
Oh, you mean for census purposes they were going to count a black as three-fifths of a human or something, of a white man? Is that what you're referring to?
No, that is how the church dealt with not putting the African in the Constitution as a citizen. They had to work around it. See, when you have the opportunity to study all the trickery, which you duly noted. You duly noted in all the statements that you have made tonight, then you can see behind the lines of what they're doing. And that's why they have gone back into this Indian Nation piece, which you're talking about, which, you know, I'm glad the notes are right here. 1861, where you had 4,000 black slaves living amongst them, and then they made a ruling that all these people have all rights of the nation, and then they take and make a ruling that you have to be of Indian blood, okay? And then they take and, you know, they change the situation to, as you stated, to go against the Africans here in America. All those people who have been through the majority of the indigenous nations, okay, from the Yahi all the way through, you know, through the Yellowhand, the Blackfoot, the Crow, all of them, all right?
Brother Robinson, this is what we're going to do. I want you to hold that point because tomorrow, we just learned a little while ago, Brother Alton Maddox will be joining us tomorrow. So that will be an ideal, I think, question to pose to Attorney Alton Maddox, because he often speaks about the Dred Scott case and has some very clear and key positions about it. So just hold that point until tomorrow. We're going to address it then and really be able to go into it more in-depthly. But the point we want to put, I think, tonight in talking with Sister Marilyn is very clearly this. See, one thing that I think needs to be noted in this dialogue is the idea of citizenship, meaning that the Freedmen peoples, they more or less agreed to have that relationship with the Cherokee Nation.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I think what Sister Marilyn is referring to is the fact that that law or that agreement amongst them, it enabled them to interact in that way. The flip side of that is, as it pertains to Africans who are said to be citizens of the so-called U.S., we never made that agreement with them. It was imposed.
That's right.
Therein is the key difference where the question of citizenship has to be questioned. You see, so again, without going into that too in-depthly, tomorrow we're going to really revisit that. But I think that that bit of clarity is necessary for now, because on one end, you have a group of peoples who have, in fact, agreed to be a citizen of a nation,
mm-hmm,
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so with that said, they're now being faced with being, you know, neglected, pushed to the side, and erased, sort of, or at least attempted. Now, of course, that similar thing is happening to us, those of us mm-hmm. who are not particularly in a designated nation, which is why it's so important that we do, in fact, establish that. So with that said, the end of the month, those who are interested in knowing more about a plebiscite, you'll be able to get that information starting on August the 31st when we begin to hold real community meetings for self-determination, sovereignty, independence, et cetera, et cetera. But let's go back to talking with Sister Marilyn. Brother Ramos, thank you very much, and hopefully you'll tune in tomorrow and raise some of those same questions about the 14th and 15th Amendment with Brother Austin Maddox.
Oh, most definitely. I hope Alton will give me a call.
Well, we'll talk to him tomorrow. We'll put you through, and you can ask him that, too.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend. All right. So, Sister Marilyn, going back to you now, again, talking about and thinking about the relationship and the idea of citizenship. Certainly, let me get some clarity on this. When we talk about the Cherokee Nation, of course, you are in Oklahoma, but there are other branches or components of the Cherokee Nation in other parts of the country. Is that correct?
No, the tribe is based in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Now, but, you know, and at one time, when the tribe actually had a reservation, you had
uh-huh.
to live within the tribe's jurisdiction. You could not, if you moved 500 miles away, you were considered by tribal law to have abandoned the tribe.
Okay.
But now you can be a citizen of the tribe and even live in another country. So the concept of tribal membership in that way is not the same as it was, say, 150 years ago.
Okay, I see now. That's interesting to know. So, now, then let me also ask, if there's a lawsuit, you did indicate that there are two federal lawsuits pending. So now, how does that work? Meaning, from what I was told, the governments of the various nations were, in fact, their operations, meaning that had nothing to do with any other nation or government. So since you're filing now on the federal level, how does that impact the independence or the sovereignty of the nation?
Okay. The Cherokee Nation, just like any other federalized tribe,
mm-hmm.
which the U.S. government has a government-to-government relationship with, is not a completely independent nation. That was confirmed by the Supreme Court back in Cherokee Nation versus Georgia in 1830 or some of those very old cases. The tribal governments are dependent sovereign nations, which means that the tribes are subject to U.S. law. Now, in some ways, the U.S. government has allowed the tribes to exercise sovereignty in certain areas. But in other ways, they have not. For instance, at one time, the tribal governments, they had their own military forces. The tribal
mm-hmm.
governments could you know, incarcerate people or carry out capital punishment. By U.S. law, Congress passed a law in 1887 or something like that, that the tribal governments cannot execute people. They cannot have trials on major crimes based on the Major Crimes Act. And so this is the thing, that the tribe itself made an agreement with the U.S. government as a party to the agreement that the freedmen people would have citizenship. They have, you know, it's just like the U.S. government in 1846, after the United States had invaded Mexico and they made a treaty agreement with Mexico. Those areas that the U.S. government had conquered in, New Mexico, Arizona, those areas there, under the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, and I may be mispronouncing it, those persons were granted U.S. citizenship that lived there, even though really up to that time only white people normally were U.S. citizens. But based on that treaty agreement with Mexico, those persons who had been Mexican nationals, you know, became United States citizens. And so they no longer could vote in Mexican elections. They were no longer subject to, if there was a war, they had to go and fight with the U.S. Army, not the Mexican Army. So, that treaty is still valid. The Mexican government can't come in and drag off people from New Mexico and draft them into the Army.
Okay.
And I want to emphasize that until 1901, when Congress passed a law, these black people in the tribes, such as the Cherokee Nation, they didn't have U.S. citizenship because the people were citizens of the tribal government. They were citizens of the Indian Nation. You know, just like, for instance, Mexico has people of African descent who are citizens. So does Canada. So does France. We're talking about nationhood, not strictly race. Although the majority of people that are Cherokee, black Cherokees, Cherokee freedmen, the majority of them do have Indian ancestry, but certainly not all of them.
Okay. Now, in 2004, you and other representatives did attend the NAACP's conference, and at that point they supported your position. Has there been any since then? Has there been any action from the NAACP?
No, there hasn't been. Actually, it was 2004, I believe it was the state of Oklahoma that had a resolution, and then on 2007 it was adopted at the national level. I believe it may not have been the exact same resolution, but there's not been action like a call for a national casino boycott or something like this, of the tribe by the NAACP. Now the NAACP has assisted with coordinating some forums where the freedmen issue was raised. I know, like in New York City, Congresswoman Diane Watson was on a panel with a couple of other congresspeople. I think it was Congressman Scott and Congressman Barney Frank, and she talked on the freedmen issue. So as I said, they have allowed some forums, the freedmen have purchased booths. Have rented booths in the last two or three NAACP conferences, but we purchased them on the same basis as other parties. As I said, there has not. And Mr. Hillary Shelton, he's at the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation panel. He participated in a panel that Congresswoman Johnson. Congresswoman Diane Watson and Congressman John Conyers had set up. So as I said, you know, there has been some support, but there are some things that could be done to further support, you know, help the freedmen. I think there's no question about it.
Okay. Well, with that said, I certainly wish to extend an invitation to you to join us in October. There are several sessions that we'll be holding as part of the next phase of developing the male movement and our extended programs that entail the development of our communities as well as independent nations, supporting them and establishing newer ones. So certainly any issue that is relevant to our people of African descent is one that we want to bring to the forefront. So again, I want to extend an invitation to you to present at our forum in October, and I'll send you more information about that.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not sure how that would work, but, you know, as I said, I'd certainly like to see the information on it.
Absolutely. Now, let me also ask, the African Foundation, what exactly is it, the African Indians Foundation?
Okay, the African Indians Foundation is a 501c3, that was set up by the board of the Descendants of Freedmen about 4 or 5 years ago because in order to more easily raise money for some of the things that the Descendants of Freedmen Association, which is a membership organization, you know, was doing. We had set up the Descendants Association as a 501c4, so that we could, you know, use money to lobby Congress, you know, for, you know, specific legislation. But we had parties who wanted to donate for some of the things, like some of our, you know, civil rights lawsuits and things that, you know, they wanted to get a tax break. And so we set up a 501c3. So that's what the African Indians Foundation is. You know, if you look at the articles of incorporation, they're almost identical to the Descendants, except that, you know, using congressional lobbying is not one of the tools that, you know, is available for use. But the African Indians Foundation, again, the goal is to protect the freedmen, to provide support and get enforcement of the Freedmen Treaty rights.
How many freedmen are there presently, roughly?
Okay. Just talking about the Cherokee Nation, there are about 25 to 30,000 people. Now, the majority of those people are not, you know, members of the tribe, because the tribe has refused to register them as tribal members, even though legally they should be registered as tribal members.
Wow.
And then if we talk about, you know, the other former slaveholding tribes, you know, we're talking about 100 to 150,000 people. So, you know, again, we're not talking about millions of people, but, you know, one of the reasons that some people, you know, didn't think that it was important in slavery or Jim Crow laws, as they said, well, that doesn't affect the vast majority of people in this country. The majority of people have profited off of a race-based society. You know, people came in here from Europe that were very poor in a few years, you know, based on the opportunities, which they were not being denied because they were Caucasian people, they became millionaires. And so, as I said, because there was a permanent, because it had been set up as a permanent lower underclass. You can't have injustice because it only affects a minority of people.
So let us reiterate again that what we see happening
with the attempted elimination of citizenship, which means rights, really. I mean, that's what we're really talking about, the rights to have access and to be able to interact in a certain type of way, especially as it pertains to commerce. So what we're seeing, of course, is that there is now a greater influx of corporations and other types of financiers, or whatever you want to call them. And as a result, there's this attempt to push out those who literally would have the rights to the various assets or the various types of development. Since, in fact, we're now talking about casino, and we know that there's this real thing about oil, because all over the world is this fight and struggle for oil. So certainly there is oil in Oklahoma.
Well, that's correct. You know, as you said, you know, you have, because of tribal leadership, is controlling, you know, right now has money. You know, as you said, you have corporations who are who want to do business with the tribal leaders. You know, you have political leaders, senators, and the like, who want to do business. Although you know, it is correct that some of those folks that run the corporations, they feel much more comfortable if they're doing business with a group of people who look the same as them, except that they are a member of an Indian tribe, than a person that clearly has African descent. That is some part of it. I think that there's no question. But as I said, you know, the economic development, the economic rights, you know, to do business, you know, the blacks are being shut out. And if as I said, and a lot of people, when they think of, and some people who have not pursued tribal membership in the past, and not necessarily with these five tribes, you know, their attitude has been more, well, you know, I don't see anything that I need or whatever. But the thing is, a lot of times you can't see over the horizon. And some of the people that, and a lot of people are not aware that there are people making millions of dollars out of contracts as Indian contractors. There's people making millions of dollars, you know, that have smoke shops, if they can get their allotted land into restriction status, you know, as I said, a lot of opportunities are being made or out there, but a lot of people are not aware of what they are, and even if the rights, even if the economic potential was very less, the people still should not be shut out. But as I said, a lot of it is, again, who's going to share the money? You know, who's going to control this economic power?
Yeah, and see, I raised that because over the past few years, I've had the opportunity to dialogue and interact with representatives from Lakota Nation, and one of the things that were made very clear was that one of the biggest problems that they were having was this influx of corporations attempting to come in, take the land, or to, you know, maneuver in such a way where those who were more inclined to follow with their program, they would use them to push out those who were not inclined to follow their program, and they would help finance them and so forth and so on. So I'm seeing a pattern, and I think we have to pay, you know, closer attention to, as Brother Robert Susan and others have indicated, it's business as usual. This is what these people do. This is what they've always done. You know, here in the States, we are seeing a similar thing in that our communities, black communities, are being totally rezoned, taken over. They are allowing intentionally for properties to become vacant and then, you know, go to the point where you have to tear them down in order for them to rebuild what they want. So, and this is happening all over the country in black neighborhoods. So we see the same pattern all the time. And at some point, we have to discuss what are we going to do about it, you see. We have to begin collectively to take these issues outside of the U.S. because there's no way we're going to hold the robber accountable in his own court. This is not going to happen. We're not going to get justice that way. So I dare say, and I say this now, and I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it in the future, we've got to become a bit more global when it comes to raising our issues and our concerns. We have to take that into other courts because there's no way these people, they are going to want to have their foot on our necks as long as they can or kick us out whenever they feel like it. And I think, again, this is a classic example of using Indian Uncle Toms to do the dirty work of the oppressor.
You're correct, and I know that I'm familiar with the history, you know, various different tribes, and I know a lot of times those tribal leaders who would sell the tribe's assets to big corporations for, you know, very little money. The federal government or corrupt senators or whoever would try to push those people in the powerful positions, you know, because, they did not want to protect the tribe and the tribe's people. And, again, you know, business as usual, you know, the theft. And this time, you know, it's the, you know, the blacks are part of the pawns. People of color, people of African descent in this country are going to have to become aware. We're going to have to, like you said, become more global. The tools are there. The books are there. The internet is there. We're going to have to empower ourselves. You know, there's no law. There's no law that's stopping anybody from learning. It's not like, you know, 1850 where people had to, you know, sneak out in the barn and hold a candle to read a forbidden book. It's all there at our fingertips.
Right. Well, without a doubt. My sister, let folks know how they can stay in touch with you or the website and so forth for updates. Please give out that information.
Okay, the Descendants of Freedmen website is www.freedmen5tribes.com. And if you can't remember that, if you put in my name, Marilyn Van, Cherokee or something like that, it'll pop up and different articles will pop up. So as I said, you know, that's a good place to, you know, come up with some information for those that are not familiar. This is Philadelphia, correct? Is that where you are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in Philly.
Okay. We need people to let members of Congress, let senators, let people who can do some things know that this is an important issue. And so we need folks to make some calls, write some letters, send some faxes, ask them to protect the freedmen, you know, to lean on the Department of Interior, the Department of Justice, to exercise their authority to ensure that the freedmen people have their you know, civil and economic rights. Also, civil rights organizations. One of the things that one of the NAACP leadership said, well, the NAACP can, if, you know, different chapters around the country indicate that this is something important, that the civil rights of the freedmen, then it can become, they can give more attention to the issue. So this is something that, you know, because there have been, you know, resolutions that have been looked at and passed on the freedmen, you know, from time to time, that's something that needs to be brought to that forefront. Certainly, those that, you know, are financially well set, it always takes money to do some things. On our website, you know, we have you know, we have the address for our 501c3 if someone would like to make a tax-deductible donation for African Indians. So, as I said, you know, awareness, another thing is, you know, we're always looking for some speaking engagements. I've, you know, I know myself, I presented at a lot of different major universities around the country. You know, there's been some others that I was invited to, but all of a sudden I was uninvited or something happened, you know, it, very strange. It appears that possibly a check was changed hands and the invitation was withdrawn, whatever. But as I said, for those that may be in academia, you know, one of the things is bringing this sort of thing to the forefront of the young people of academia. So, you know, if there are some opportunities there, we would love to know it.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because it just so happened that the New Woman Movement has recently, not really recently, but it's just now that we're really unveiling it. Come October, we're going to implement our Speakers Bureau, and it's primarily geared to women of African descent that have a not only positive and motivational message, but the message that deals with self-determination, justice, and so forth. So I will definitely have one of our sisters to call you to give you more information about that as well, because what we found is we had to create our own Speakers Bureau because I, too, was not getting involved or getting invited, rather, to many of the colleges and universities because the Men and Women March was so out of the box that a lot of the institutions did not want our message to be heard. So we realized that we had to push the issue, and that's exactly what we're doing now, and challenging these women's studies departments and these African studies departments. Well, they're no longer going to just, you know, negate or dismiss us or whatever. So certainly we'll talk with you further about, you know, how we can get you on our Speakers Bureau, bottom line. And especially with Black History Month coming soon, as well as Women's History Month.
Well, that just sounds very exciting. And as I said, you know, as you're saying, sometimes we have to do things to promote our own history.
Absolutely. I mean,
there are others, no doubt.
But now I want you to hold that point for one moment. I want to bring to your attention, my sister, that even though I'm based in Philadelphia, I'm looking at our board, we have listeners from, oh my goodness, I see Florida, I'm seeing Louisiana, I'm seeing New Jersey and Atlanta. So my point is that you are being heard worldwide. Now, with that said, again, hold your point for one moment because I see that someone has a question or a comment. Caller, you are, let's see, the last digits of your number is 8452. Did you have a question or a comment for Sister Marilyn?
Hey, greetings, Empress. How you doing?
Greetings. Is this Brother Steve?
Yes, it is.
Hey, brother, how you doing tonight?
Oh, very well, very well.
Good thing.
I want to say greetings to Sister Marilyn as well.
Greetings, Brother Steve. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good, doing
good. Atlanta in the house.
yeah, no doubt. I'm definitely glad you all took this conversation up tonight. It's important for us, any of us who are concerned about our sovereignty issues or rights, on whatever level.
That's right.
Be as local as possible. And one of the things in listening to some of the details that Sister Marilyn was sharing that I thought about in particular is we have not learned how to manipulate and interpret laws that are on the books to our favor legally.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are many treaties that the government of the United States has signed and then have not held themselves to.
That's
one of the ones in particular that I'm focused on now, and I really would encourage, and I want Sister Marilyn's thoughts on this, is I asked a nationally syndicated radio talk show host, Attorney Warren Ballantyne, on his show one day, if the Emancipation Proclamation was a legally binding document. He acknowledged that it was. Now, in particular, I want to encourage everyone to go for yourself and read the full text of the Emancipation Proclamation from 1863. Remember, it was amended in 1865 to give those freed slaves the right to fight in the Union Army against the Confederacy.
Wow.
But the first part of the Emancipation Proclamation says that because we as a people, that means slaves, were in complete rebellion against the United States government, we are henceforth and forever set free. That's a freedom that we determine what that is. It also states in the Emancipation Proclamation that the executive branch and the military have the duty to protect us as a people from anyone who would stop us from going for our freedom.
Now, Brother Steve, hold that point for one moment.
Okay.
I just was informed we've run out of time. However, those of you who are on the phone line, you will continue to hear this conversation. We're going to go on maybe for another 5 minutes. But those of you who are online, you're going to lose us because we've only logged in until 12:30 for tonight, Eastern Standard Time, Eastern Daylight Time. If you want to continue to hear the rest of this, just dial 646-652-2232. Remember, we will be back tomorrow with Brother Austin Maddox for a special edition of New Day Resurrection Liberation, but we're getting ready to lose our web connection. Those of you who are still online with your telephone, stay there. We're going to stay right here with you. We will not lose the connection, at least until we hang up. But again, we thank all of you for tuning in. Sister Marilyn, you stay right there. We're just going to take a quick little brief. Brother Steve, you stay right there. And again, family, we thank all of you. We want you to tune in next week. Again, April the 31st, we start our community sessions for self-determination and warrior training. Until next week, this is Empress Chi signing out, and we'll be back next week. Okay, now, we are going to lose our web for the moment, and we're going to continue the dialogue, though, with the telephone. Brother Steve, continue.
Yes, give thanks, Empress. Well, the main point that I'm stressing is that we were given the legal right to our self-determination, in my opinion, through the legally binding document of the executive order. So in particular, with Obama now being in office, him being proficient in constitutional law, what is the probability of our being able to now construct or prepare an executive order even if nothing else, reenacting the Emancipation Proclamation. Because in my opinion, what happened to us as a people was we joined the Union Army and fought and died on behalf of this country. And from that experience, and of course many other wars that we have engaged in as a people, even though we suffered terrorism and racism at the hands of our oppressor, we feel a connection, an even greater connection to this country, and a greater love and appreciation, in a sense, for being a citizen. But we never really had an opportunity to go for our freedom, which of course means that we have to then talk about the terms of our separation.
Yes,
of course, that's territory, that's financial compensation, of course, and some other things. But I definitely would love to see, and I'm going to be talking to Brother Alton about it as well, because I've spoken to him on some other radio shows about this subject. But I think today, instead of following Harriet Tubman's journey up through the Underground Railroad, we really need to establish a more overground railroad where we are blatant and in the open in our move towards, you know, real freedom and real self-determination. So if Sister Marilyn could speak to that, I would appreciate it.
Sister Marilyn?
Well, I guess I don't quite understand the question.
If I may just kind of simplify a little bit, and this doesn't go to the fullest extent, but I think the question is really around, as a freedman, a representative of the freedman peoples, how do you feel, or how do you see the Emancipation Proclamation? How do you see that as being of significance, or is there any relationship to it or of it to the freedman peoples? What are your thoughts about the Emancipation Proclamation?
Okay. The Emancipation Proclamation did not affect the status of the blacks who were enslaved by the tribes, because the Emancipation Proclamation only affected, you know, the blacks who were enslaved by U.S. citizens. So, you know, if there were blacks enslaved in the Caribbean or somewhere else, it didn't affect them. So regarding the Cherokee freedmen, the tribe itself, they had new tribal leaders, the tribe had two factions, a pro and an anti-slavery faction by the middle of the Civil War. And so in February of 1863, the anti-slavery faction ended slavery by tribal law. And the black codes that were that had been passed over the last, you know, 30 years or whatever in the tribe, all those were set aside. But the blacks in the tribe, except for those who were already citizens under tribal law, 90% of the blacks were still not citizens, did not have, the rights, to vote, to hold office, the obligations of citizenship either. And so those only came when the Treaty of 1866 was signed. And so the Emancipation Proclamation did not affect slavery, under tribal that had been allowed under tribal governments.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
because again and again, after the treaty was signed, none of these blacks had U.S. citizenship. That meant that, you know, the blacks in the tribes, even though black people in Mississippi in 1867, 1868, could run for office, could vote, could get property under the Homestead Act or some other things like this, go to schools that were being, set up by, state funds or whatever, that didn't apply to the blacks who were citizens of the Indian tribes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I completely hear what you're saying, sister. My reason for bringing that up is because I think that we're battling the same enemy. And so whether it's our struggle with the Native Americans or the Indian tribes and trying to get recognition or restitution through our connection with them, or for us to look at getting, you know, restitution as a whole, as black people generally. I'm just not seeing the, or I'm really encouraging a collaborating
mm-hmm.
effort, because at the end of the day, there was one primary thing that was taken from us as a people in order to put us into slavery, in a sense, and that was our ability to rule self.
Mm-hmm.
Once our ability to rule self was taken, then we were robbed of our names and our language and our history and our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So now, today, we quote unquote call ourselves free, and we can carry whatever name we want, speak whatever language, learn our history, practice our culture, but we have yet as a people to regain that primary thing that was taken to enslave us, which is our ability to rule self. So I think the nation building efforts just need to come together and exercise a greater amount of functional unity to achieve the ultimate objective, which is our total liberation. And we can go various methods in doing so, but if the goal is liberation, like in a mathematical example, if the goal is 7, you can go 4+3, I can go 5+2, Empress can go 6+1, but at the end we're going to arrive at the same place. And so I think we need to get clear on a common objective in order for this fight to be won.
Ashe. Well, family, I thank both of you and all of you who are still tuning in. We thank all of you for hanging in there with us tonight. This has definitely been a powerful and very productive dialogue, and certainly one that should have you all taking some further actions, be it the further examination of the so-called Emancipation Proclamation, be it, hint, 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 the development of some plebiscites, or what have you. Needless to say, the issue of civil rights and certainly the issue of human rights / natural rights is one that we must not only begin to examine a lot closer, but we must struggle for even to a greater extent. Needless to say, the enemy is stepping its game up, and I dare say we surely better begin to implement ours. Sister Marilyn, thank you so much for taking this time with us, and you have an open door. Whenever you have some updates or you feel that you want to communicate with our family listening audience, we certainly welcome you to do so. Brother Steve, thank you again. And, of course, you're going to be on often, so we'll be talking to you soon, and probably tomorrow.
Well, I have enjoyed being on tonight, and I appreciate your gracious invitation to come on the program another day. And so So I want to thank you again, and as we say in Cherokee, Wado, which is thank you.
Oh, wonderful. And you know what? I'm really looking forward to, you know, learning more about our African people who are also known as the Black Indians, the Black Cherokees. Before we go, Sister Marilyn, let me ask you, is there a custom, or were there customs that remained with the freedmen that were indigenous of the African peoples? In other words, were there some things retained that were specifically from the African peoples?
I think there was very little. I think so far as the freedmen people, there was a
mm-hmm.
little bit more retained with the
black
Seminoles.
People.
I think they were more likely to keep some African names, than some of the other tribes, or a little bit more African culture that was mixed with the Indian culture. But you know, so far as like the, you know, the black Cherokee people, you know, those that are mixed with, you know, African, with Indian ancestry, you have some people who can speak a little bit, very not many, because you have very few speakers in the tribe. You know, you have some people who know, some historical things or, some things about food, but, but so far as the African lineage, it's pretty much been obliterated. And people don't, and like myself, even though, for instance, say, I can trace my Indian ancestry back to, 1800 or a little bit before, but I cannot trace back any African ancestry back to any clan or tribal nation, or anything like this. And those kind of records, I don't think there's any way really to get those.
Wow. And just like Brother Evan was saying earlier, it's really incumbent upon us today to document as much as we can now, because it's evident there's a lot of our history that we just will never know, at least not in written form. So it's so important, and I encourage everyone, please, this is why we struggle now to make certain that the Million Woman March is placed in its proper place, being the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever. We must make certain that it takes its rightful place in history, both in Black history, in women's history, and in world history, because if we don't do this for ourselves, certainly no one else will. And this, again, is a perfect example. Surely there's so much history, I'm certain, of the African peoples who were brought up or came up through the Cherokee Nation that we will probably never know about. It's just very, very unfortunate. But Sister Melanie, again, I thank you for taking this time with us. And, just let us know if ever you want to come on anytime in the near future or in the far future, we're here.
Well, thank you so much, and you and Sister Isman, I've enjoyed being on, and I just want to say good night to everybody.
All right, my sister, and good night to you, and we'll definitely be in touch with you to see if we can get you into Philly very soon, and certainly to do some follow-up as far as seeing how we can get some of these NAACPs to get more involved, since, in fact, one of their chapters did provide a resolution. So we're going to do a follow-up and see, what else can be done in that regard.
We appreciate it. As I said, we have a national resolution that passed in Detroit in 2007, regarding the Cherokee Freedmen rights. But anyway,
okay.
As you said, there's more that can be done. So thank you very much, and we will continue to be in contact. Thank you.
Thank you, my sister.
Good night, sister. Good night. Mm-hmm.
Good night. All right, family. We are going to close out this segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. I want to remind you again, tomorrow there will be a special edition, 7 o'clock. We're going to be coming on live with Brother Alton Maddox. We're going to be talking about the recent decision with the case of the sister from Guinea who was raped by the Frenchman, needless to say, another slap in the face to show you how they manipulate the information, propaganda, and so forth. We're going to also talk about a local situation, which is in reference to Dr. Arlene Ackerman. We want to know what you all think about that. We know that there's a lot of controversy about some things, especially that apparently she was not exactly in favor of having Black studies, African studies in the public schools. Well, we're going to talk about that. And we're going to also talk about, though, was it because she raised the issue about there being only a few to none contracts given to Black folks through the school district or in regard to the school district? We're going to talk about that.
But again, we're going to talk with Brother Austin Maddox about not only the case of Sister Diallo, but also, as we said earlier, we're going to go into the proclamation, whatever that thing is. And, of course, we're going to talk about the need for a plebiscite. And with that said, we want to remind you, beginning on August the 31st, we're going to start our first community sessions. Meeting of the Minds is back, but we're also now introducing African Warrior Training Sessions and a monthly Black Community Self-Determination Forums. August the 31st kicks off this now new segment of our Meeting of the Mind and our African Community Forum. And the first one is going to take place at the Traditional African Healing Center, located at 4834 Frankfort Avenue. Again, 4834 Frankfort Avenue. My brother Shango Wande will be presenting. And we're going to also talk about what Brother Steve brought to our attention last week, the 10-10-50 program. And we're going to talk more about gentrification, for lack of a better word, displacement. We're going to talk about that and some proposed actions as to what we can do about it. At least here in Philly, we got some plans and some ideas. While some want to have meetings and have discussions, and it's all good, we applaud it, some are ready for action. If that's you, then you want to attend our Warrior Training Sessions and our monthly now Black Community Self-Determination Forum. Some of the issues or questions are going to be raised at our forum, which will take place starting on the 31st. There's be another one on September the 1st and September the 2nd. Those two will be at the Dendy Recreation Center, which is located at 10th and Oxford Street. Again, Dendy Recreation Center, located at 10th and Oxford Street. Here are some of the topics that we're going to be examining with solutions in mind. One, do you have a plan, proposal, or a proactive project for real Black African original peoples, community development, upliftment, self-determination, and justice that you want to share with others, want them to get involved, or partner with other similar or like minds? If so, you need to get to these sessions. Or are you tired of politicians, so-called community leaders, elected officials, and their cronies who are BSing us and selling us out and using us as pawns or worse? Are you ready to support the work and actions to draft, train, and help finance our own elected officials, political representatives, independent parties, etc.? Sisters, do you want assistance in helping your sons and grandsons and nephews and so forth to be better Black men? Mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, will you help save our daughters? If the yes to any of these, then you definitely want to come out on August the 31st to the Traditional African Healing Center at 4834 Frankfort Avenue, or on Thursday and Friday at the Dendy Recreation Center located at 10th and Oxford Streets. A few more questions for those of you who may be interested. Do you want to help develop our own community mayors? See, now this is starting to really get good, because this is all some new stuff that needs to be happening and is going to start happening here in Philly. Do you want to take a step towards community self-governance, accountability, and sustainability? Do you want to have a real say and be a part of a plan of action in response to land, property, and community neighborhood takeovers? Hint, hint, the takeover of our communities nationwide. Are you tired of everybody else opening stores and other businesses in our community? And most of us keep sitting back watching while we pour our monies into their pockets and their cash registers? Are you interested in operational, functional, and or practical unity now? Will you support a free independent press, meaning communications and media apparatuses that will be consistent and committed to reporting, investigating, helping to record, document, and representing our community's best interests? Will you support collective bulk purchasing and bartering? And lastly, are you interested in a real Black Chamber of Commerce / business development operations and related ventures? Well, again, you need to get involved with our now Black Community Self-Determination Forums, starting August the 31st through September the 3rd, including African Warrior Training. The next sessions will be next month, October. Of course, the 14th and the 15th is a two-day session for brothers only, for Black men who will stand up and speak out against violence and abuse of our women and girls. Coming will be Brother Imwali Mubaruti, also Brother Kamal Kabon, and Brother Alton Maddox. So we will have a town meeting as well as a two-day conference for brothers only. The town meeting's for everyone. And again, it will focus on the issue of violence and abuse, not only domestic violence, but all types of violence and abuse. And we're going to look at the whole thing, including how it got started, the effects, and, of course, the solutions as it pertains to what Black men can now do. So with that said, we hope that you will all tune in next week, certainly tomorrow, but, of course, every week we're here, Saturday, 10:30 p.m., Eastern Daylight Time, New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. We thank all of you for tuning in tonight, and we thank all of you for continuing to pass the word that we are here every week. We appreciate your support. I want to remind you that starting in, I guess, September, we will start making available for those who are interested advertising opportunities. Yes, we are going to do that because, well, we need to begin to obtain additional equipment so that our broadcast can become more effective and just more qualitative. And so we're going to offer advertising to help offset some of those costs. But also, we have membership now for all types of participation with the Million Woman Movement, from support membership to affiliation membership to active membership. We're going to tell you more about that tomorrow and future shows. In the meantime, family, we thank you all again for tuning in. Tomorrow we will bring you a Mumia Abu-Jamal commentary. We've kind of run out of time tonight, but again, we thank you. Remember, we will leave you in the idea, in the concept of Ma'at Hotep. We say Ma'at Hotep because just saying Hotep, well, for me, is just not what I feel we need to project here at New Day Resurrection Liberation. We will always want and feel and be in peace, but for some of us, we must also continue to fight for justice. So we say Ma'at Hotep with that in mind because for us there can be no real peace until there is justice. There could be no Hotep until there is Ma'at. We bring it all together and of course we say Ma'at Hotep. And with that we keep in mind that we strive, we move forward, and we do that in order to obtain power, prosperity, and then peace. Until tomorrow, December's Chi, and while the storm is on its way or already among some of us, we know that it's all good because some of us are here. No matter what, we're here to win it, and we shall be victorious. Promote you to the Shinda. Together we shall win. Tutanana.